From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 11th day of May, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at TotalFarmMarketing.com. Aaron Hager, wheat scientist from the University of Illinois, will be here with some urgent information for producers in the field planting today and what they might need to think about as it relates to the sprayers that maybe haven't been across their fields just yet. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too to see how long those planters will be in the field across the Midwest and check in on the wheat crop here in the United States, Canada, and in Europe, all with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Our theme song is written and performed by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, July corn today settled at $7.88.5. It was up 13.25. December at $7.35.75, 16.75 higher. July soybeans at $16.06.75, up 14.5. November up 17.5 at $14.72.25. Bean meal $3.60 lower, and the bean oil up $2.41. July wheat up 20.25 at $11.13 for the soft red. The hard red at $12.5, up 25.5. Live cattle futures, $1.17.5 higher in the June. The August feeders were down $1.85, and lean hogs were 72.5 lower. Crude oil up $5.54 a barrel at $105.30. The wholesale price of gasoline on the RBOB at $3.70, 15.7 higher in diesel fuel, up 7.6 on this Wednesday. Jackie Vakes now joins us from TotalFarmMarketing.com. Hi, Jackie. Thank you for being with us today.
Hi, Todd.
Well, tell me a little bit about our normal things to begin with. Support and resistance levels.
All righty. Well, when we look at corn, we've got July 753 and 838, September 714 and 777, December 694 and 755. When you have beans, we have July at 1635 and 1741, August 1584 and 1692, November 1477 and 1555. For gold, May 1805 and 1835, the Dow Jones 32303 and 33296, U.S. dollar index, unfortunately getting higher, 102.45 and 103.93. And as we move forward, Todd, manage money. This is kind of interesting. You know, we talk often about the impact that managed money and index traders have on our on the futures. And they've shifted in their soft red wheat from being short 12,000 last week to long 37,000 this week. In corn, they're long 331,000 compared to 338 last week. Beans, 148 compared to 134 last week. Soy meal, 57 versus 76 last week, and soy oil, 86 versus 91. And so, you know, as the shift goes, we see it now. We've seen a lot of activity in the wheat market, and you can see that some of that definitely is coming in the managed money area. You look at the index traders, and, you know, we're following them closely because they hedge for inflation. Now, last week, they actually dropped their corn position by 229 contracts, not much when you consider they're holding 591,007 contracts. On beans, they dropped 4,011 contracts, currently at 242,765. And wheat, they dropped 2,022, and they're currently at 185,515. So, you know, it's interesting. From everything, all the indicators are there, I guess, that they're back in the market again. And I won't be surprised if we see that these numbers go up next week.
What do you see for the export situation?
Well, that's, yeah, wheat exports, wow. They're 20% behind compared to 19% last year. Corn 16 compared to 16 last week, and soybeans 15 compared to 17. I mean, corn exports have been extremely strong. And, you know, the expectation is on the report tomorrow that we're probably going to see another improvement in the export number coming out of corn. Beans have just been, you know, they don't have to average as much as anybody else to get through because they've had good sales. Wheat is just such a laggard, you know, and And wheat has a hard time competing. One of the reasons that wheat has been up as much, of course, is because of the Ukraine war and everything else and all the questions about how much wheat will be exported. And now we're hearing, that we've got Russians stealing wheat out of Ukraine and exporting it. And so it's just such a mixed bag. You don't know what to expect. But I think that we could possibly see wheat exports drop a little bit on this report. We'll see once what tomorrow morning brings.
You mentioned that report. The WASD is due out at 11 a.m. Central Time. Just as a reminder, this is not a crop production report, at least for corn and soybeans, but it is the first time that USDA will give us some numbers related to those new crop or the harvest that will come this fall for both of those crops. I'm wondering what your expectations might be.
Well, the estimates that we've got out are for corn production at $14,779,000,000. Now, that's compared to $15,115,000,000 this year. Soybeans, $4,604,000,000 compared to $4,435,000,000. And when you look at ending stocks, I'll cover the 21-22 first. Currently, we have ending stocks in corn at estimates are $1.404 billion compared to $1.440 billion. So it would be a drop of about 36 million bushels. Beans, 222 compared to 260 last month. That'd be a drop of 38 million bushels. Wheat, 681 compared to 678 last month. That would be an increase of 3 million bushels. Now, when you look at the 22-23 numbers, of course, we don't have anything from April, but they're saying 1.305 for corn. That'd be about almost 100 million less than this, what we currently have. Beans at 319, almost 100 million more than we currently have. And wheat at 655 at about 25 million less than we currently have. So I think it's going to be an interesting report, and especially considering, that they could possibly adjust some of the corn yields because of how slow the planting has been. Now, when you look at the world stockpile numbers for 21-22, you've got corn at 303.7 compared to 305, so just a little bit bigger. Beans a little bit smaller. Wheat almost identical. And when you go into 22-23, of course, you could tell by the carryout numbers, the numbers are smaller for corn and wheat, higher for beans, because they expect a higher production level. And when we look at the 21-22 Brazilian corn and soybean production, we look at corn at 113.9 compared to 116 last month, and soybeans at 124.5 compared to 125 last month.
Tell me a little bit more about that second crop corn in Brazil. We've been worried that the monsoons ended early and it has been dry. What kind of conditions do you think they're working under, and what impact does it have?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's tough down there. There really isn't very much in the forecast, and the safrinha corn in central Brazil, the only chance of rain this week is in the far eastern and the far northern parts, so it's calling for localized showers. It would be like what we normally would get in our summertime, right? Just localized showers. Now, IMEA, which is their crop people, they made their eighth assessment of the corn crop in Mato Grosso this time, and they dropped it again. They said it was due to the dry weather in the month of April, and that was their reason for lowering the estimate. Now, Mato Grosso is the largest safrinha corn-producing state in Brazil, and they actually are responsible for 45% of the production. So that's a very significant situation. Now, we look at soybeans for next year. Of course, they're not going to start planting for another 4 months, but the estimates are already coming out, and they're saying Mato Grosso is going to increase their acres by 2.5%. And so they're going to go up to 27.4 million acres. And it's coming primarily because the farmers are, they have strong prices. There's no question about that. But most of that increased acreage is going to come from the conversion of pastures to row crops, where the cattle ranching dominates, such like in the northeast and northwest and northern Mato Grosso, the Cerrado, basically. And, if you're familiar at all with what the Cerrado is, unlike a forest, the Cerrado is like a scrub brush, and so a lot easier to clear and clean up and get into production at a rapid rate. So now if you move down to Argentina, Todd, things are not looking good in Argentina. They've got the lowest crop ratings in the entire year so far on their later planted. And as of May 5th, they have on soybeans, 12% good to excellent, 59 fair, 29 very poor to very poor, which is a 4% drop on the good to excellent from last week. and a 3% increase actually in the poor to very poor. On corn, they're at 16% good to excellent, 60 fair, and 24% poor to very poor, and that good to excellent dropped 3%, while the poor to very poor increased 2%. So they are struggling. It just backs up everything that we've been talking about and everything that we've been hearing is that the weather is really a tough down there. No question about it.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Thank you. I appreciate being asked.
That's Jackie Vick. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Aaron Hager, Extension Weed Scientist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Aaron, thank you for being with us. I take it that as you've been taking a look at fields, at least in East Central Illinois, there are some issues related to weed control that producers need to consider. Why don't you give me kind of the lay of the land at the moment to begin with?
Well, the lay of the land is, right now, Todd, it just feels underneath the feet like the land is moving. There's so much activity going on in fields. Farmers finally have some optimal planting conditions to try to catch up and get the crop in the ground. When it comes to weed control, a couple things that we want to bring up simply as reminders for individuals. Now, the first, of course, would be the ideal scenario. And that is, regardless of whether a farmer is planting a corn crop or a soybean crop, ideally all weed vegetation has been controlled prior to planting. And of course, we do that either by burn down herbicide applications in a no-till or limited-till scenario, or tillage in a more conventional tillage scenario, or some combination of those two. However, I think it's very likely, and a matter of fact, I saw an example of this on the way into the office this morning, of a field that was being planted that had not been either worked, nor had there been any burn down herbicide applied. So in other words, they were planting into a very weedy field. And when we get into these scenarios, we understand the urge to plant is there. We'll try to get the seed in the ground, try to get the herbicide and the weeds under control later. But just remember, these weeds now, especially these winter annuals, are very well established. They're very, very large. And when you run into that kind of scenario, just keep in mind that these very large and well-established weeds can begin to adversely impact crop yields very quickly. So it's not that we have several weeks to get these things under control. It's more like we have just a few days before we really need to be sure that we get the herbicide applied to get all this existing vegetation controlled.
So what are the issues that producers will be facing? What herbicides might they need to be using?
Well, in that scenario, of course, we've planted into existing vegetation without any kind of prior weed control practice. If the option now is simply going to be to use a herbicide, we need to make sure whatever the product is of choice that we have scheduled for that field has enough foliar activity to control that existing vegetation by itself. And if it doesn't, then we need to be sure that we add a tank mix partner with it that will help control that existing vegetation and then let the herbicide of choice or the more residual product give the residual control that we're looking for throughout the first early weeks of the growing season.
If the days are suitable, planting will move really quickly. Are there issues related to timing that you're worried about?
You know, Todd, when I left the farm back in the late 1980s, we had an 8-row planter, and it's hard to even find one that small these days. These planters are absolutely massive. The tractors and the speed at which they can put the crop in the ground is just absolutely mind-boggling. But remember, as a state, we are a state that is very heavy in custom application of pesticides. So in other words, while the farmers are planting, in many scenarios, they are relying on custom applicators to come back across that field if it's not previously been treated to make that application of that residual kind of product. That being said, there raises another concern. We need to really understand and be aware that whatever that herbicide is that we have selected, whether or not it has to be applied before that crop begins to emerge. In other words, is it a pre-only, or might other products allow for either a pre-only application and or an early post-application? We have concerns, obviously, with some products that must be applied before any portion of that corn plant or that soybean plant begins to emerge. So just to give you a very quick rundown, for example, in corn, any product that has safflufenacil in it, or flumioxazin in it has to be applied before that corn begins to emerge. In soybean, several active ingredients that have to come on before the soybeans even begin to crack would include things like metribuzin, flumioxazin, sulfentrazone, and the fourth one that comes to mind would be pendimethalin. Now, we gave those in terms of the names of the active ingredients. The reason being is that many of our premixes also contain one of these active ingredients. So it's not just can we go by what the trade name is. We need to understand that if you have a soybean premix product that has any of those four active ingredients that we just mentioned, it has to go on before those soybeans begin to crack.
What happens if it doesn't?
You can see a lot of injury, and you may end up in a replant scenario. And not only, you know, do we need to be aware of this, we need to also be aware of some very similar names. And for example, if you had a product called Zidua, can that be applied after soybeans begin to emerge? And the answer is yes. There's another product in the marketplace called Zidua Pro. Can it be applied after soybeans begin to emerge? The answer is no. So again, we need to pay very close attention to what the active ingredients are, not only in straight good products, but also in the many of the premixes that are in the marketplace.
Yeah, so with the growing degree days piling up, planting moving quickly, things can come out of the ground in 3 to 5 days instead of 7 to 10 sometimes. It'll be important for producers to pay attention to it all, I suppose.
It's exactly right. And again, as we've said many times going into the fall of last year, with supply issues in the herbicide arena right now, it's always, hopefully most people have, okay, what is our backup plan if we run into some of these unpredicted scenarios? For example, we get in, we get planted, but for some reason, our fields are not treated until the crop begins to emerge. Do we have the flexibility to make that change in product?
That's Aaron Hager. He's a weed scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Now let's check in with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to see if that planting pace can be kept up at a really quick speed, which is what Aaron's rather worried about because the sprayers may not be able to stay up with them. Hi, I appreciate you taking the time with us, Drew. Before we get to the Eastern Corn Belt, I would prefer that you start in the Northwest, maybe with the spring wheat planting regions, because they're really under the gun there. What's been happening?
Yeah, it just won't stop raining. That's what's happening. They keep getting one system right after the other, and very poor drying conditions between events. I think there was one or two days in the past week where we did get up into some 70s and even a few lower 80s, but it turned right around and stormed right after that. And that seems to be the cycle. We've got another large storm system that will evolve tonight and tomorrow across a part of the same region. It will move from the North Dakota, eastern Montana area right up into the heart of eastern Canada's prairies. And all of this area has been subjected to a lot of rain recently. A few showers and thunderstorms are going to occur today before we even get into the good stuff overnight tonight and tomorrow. So these next 2 days, maybe even 3 days for Canada, it will likely be very wet. Now, the moisture totals vary quite a bit. Central parts of North Dakota may pick up a couple tenths to three quarters of an inch. Not too bad. Minnesota and the far eastern part of North Dakota may pick up a half to 1.5 inches of rain, while eastern Montana, which has actually still been very dry, will pick up on 1 to 2 inches, and that'll be good for them. But eastern Saskatchewan will also get involved with 1 to 2 inches, and they just got an inch yesterday, and so it is getting wetter and wetter there, too. And, of course, Manitoba has the biggest problem right now with the Red River in flood and many, many areas just way too wet to access any fields. So when does this end? Well, this is the last of the bigger events. Saturday through Tuesday will be relatively dry up that way. But we will see some cooler temperatures around, so the drying rates will come down. And then starting Wednesday of next week, another rain event comes across the region and probably another one after that in the following weekend. The bottom line is that it's still going to be a very tough go. I think we'll do a little bit better in North Dakota because we really aren't going to get that much rain out of this new event. And so they might do well enough to get at least into the fields a little bit for a while during this weekend and early part of next week. But it's not going to be very fast because they do have additional rain coming up next week.
Farmers in the primary Corn Belt, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, are moving quickly at this point. How long will the good weather last for them?
Yeah, I think for Iowa, time is ticking away very quickly. We'll see some scattered showers occurring already tomorrow. In fact, today there's at least a little bit of shower activity in a part of the state. Tomorrow we'll see that shower activity increase a little bit more, and that'll linger into Saturday with some of that, and eventually getting into Illinois on Saturday as well. For Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan, down through the Mid-South area, the Delta and the Tennessee River Basin area, those areas will probably get at least three more days of really nice weather, temperatures in the 80s, maybe a few lower 90s, and not much, if any, precipitation around. So I think it'll be a real good opportunity. I think we're just now getting to the point where the ground is firming up enough that fieldwork can really start going a little bit faster. There's still some low-lying areas and some heavier soil areas that are going to have to wait another day or two before they can really get going. But these 3 days are real important. After that, we'll likely see some scattered showers occur during the second half of the weekend and into early next week. It's not going to be heavy rain, but just enough to keep farmers out of the fields for a little while. We might get a little bit of a break, maybe Monday into Tuesday. Some field work might occur there if we don't get too much shower activity over the weekend. And then another little disturbance coming along about midweek next week. So we're back into a more typical weather pattern for the weekend and next week, where we're going to have little rain systems coming along periodically to interfere with the aggressive planting. But it's not like it was a week or two ago where we just couldn't stop the rain and it was too cool to get good drying conditions. This is going to be much better. So the ideal conditions for the next 2 or 3 days in the eastern Midwest, not so great in the west, but maybe some progress will occur around the rain. And then we'll see a more normalish weather pattern as we go into the latter part of this month.
Finally, check in on Europe for me.
Yeah, the Europeans are getting pretty concerned right now. The overall moisture profile is in decline, and temperatures are getting a little warmer than usual. So Europe is firming up, and as this continues, there'll be more and more stress for some of the winter crops and for the recently planted spring crops. It's a great opportunity for aggressive field work to take place, but there's a lot of chatter already in the marketplace now about Europe maybe ending up with a smaller winter grain crop. And if that ends up being true, of course, there will be all kinds of implications with the problems we have right now with world stocks being what they are. So a very close eye is going to have to be placed on Europe. France, Germany are at the center of this. And of course, they're the big producers. And so a close watch on winter wheat as well as their winter rapeseed crop is going to be necessary. Spring crops may get a little slow start. I don't think this is the beginning of a big, you know, long-lasting, droughty-type weather pattern, but it's certainly going to be of concern for the next full week to week and a half, and then they may get some partial relief after that.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. He joined us here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.